Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From Alexander Field to the Central Business District, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition, sponsored by Rocket Mortgage.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York, where more than 6 million people are expected to travel to get to their Thanksgiving destinations. WCBS-TV's Zinnia Maldonado caught up with some folks at LaGuardia.
Here at LaGuardia Airport, travelers prepared for delays but pleasantly surprised.
I head to the ticket counter and print tickets and just make sure I get to the gate fast.
Today we didn't do any checked bags, so it was super easy, super smooth. There was no delay.
But watch your travel info because more than 2,000 flights have been canceled nationwide today. Little different on the roads where a majority of Thanksgiving traffic is happening.
Gas prices are higher than they ever have been for Thanksgiving. But Leon Ruffin of Philadelphia is not sweating it because he's not the one driving.
If it was my car, you ain't be bothering me right now.
And how does a college student survive a trip from Jersey to Florida?
Lots of pillows. That's the secret to a long car ride.
On I-95, John Doman for CBS News, Laurel, Maryland.
A familiar sound is flooding parts of Central Park.
With all the balloons and floats being inflated that will head through the streets of Manhattan on Thanksgiving for the big Macy's parade.
It's a wonderful day. We've done this in the past when she was a little baby and it was freezing, so it's nice to be here in the warmer weather.
And there's a clear favorite.
I really like all of them, and my favorite is Chase. I like Chase.
Last year's celebration returned to pre-pandemic form after 2020's event was made for TV only.
Happy Thanksgiving!
Matt Piper, CBS News, New York.
Walmart workers in Chesapeake, Virginia are recalling the horrific moment their manager pulled a gun and started picking off employees in a break room.
I literally was frozen. I just stood there. I literally could be dead right now, but I promise you, I didn't know what to do. Everybody else started diving, but I'm literally, like I said, I thought it was fake. It didn't kick in until I looked at my coworker and she was bleeding out of her neck.
Six people died and seven others were injured. The shooter killed himself before police arrived. No bail for a suspected shooter who killed five people at a gay bar in Colorado Springs. He heard his charges for the first time today during a video court appearance. Well, if you are cooking Thanksgiving dinner this year, the Butterball Hotline is officially open. They've been taking calls since 1981 and helped millions of home cooks prepare the perfect bird. Mary Alice Coffee is a Butterball Turkey Talk Hotline supervisor.
So you want to check the temperatures. It's 180 in the thigh. It's 170 in the breast, 165 in the stuffing. And that way you'll know it's hot and safe and ready to serve.
She says thousands of staff members are standing by. They're available by phone, Facebook, Twitter, email, even text. This is CBS News.
This hour's newscast is presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need cash out of your home and a simple way to get it, Rocket can.
So right now may be the perfect time for you to rethink how you pay for health care. And here's why. Not only is it open enrollment for a lot of people, it's also a time you can join MediShare and save even more than usual. It's true, for the typical family, switching to MediShare saves about $500 a month, which is obviously huge for a lot of people. But what's more, they like it. MediShare has double the customer satisfaction rate when compared to health insurance. Double. There are 400,000 members now. They've shared over $4 billion in medical bills. So, yeah, they can handle your bills, too. And here's the thing. If you join MediShare Complete right now, before November 30th, they will waive your new member fee. So you're going to save even more. MediShare is the gold standard in healthcare sharing. And joining right now makes a lot of sense. Again, pay no new member fees if you join now and start enjoying great savings and a great way to handle your health care. Call now, 866-88-BIBLE. That's 866-88-BIBLE, 866-88-BIBLE.
Quality Foods puts you first. No self-checkouts here. Get the groceries you want, bagged and loaded in your car if you'd like. That's quality service from real people you can expect. Delivery and pickup are available at West Grand. Visit QualityFoodsWisRapids.com. Or if you can't order online, just call West Grand and they'll take it. Don't forget the deli for delicious meats, cheese, salads, and complete hot and cold meals. Quality Foods, West Grand and Baker Drive. Locally owned and putting you and the community first.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. The Wausau Salvation Army held their annual free Thanksgiving meal on Tuesday in an effort to build community around the holidays. They served a menu of turkey, potatoes, gravy, and green bean casserole to anyone who needed it. Serving the meal 2 days before Thanksgiving would give everyone the chance to be with their family or friends on the actual holiday. Two former residents of Adams County are being charged with felony election fraud after investigators found they had voted in two states in both general elections in 2020 and 2022. Donald Gross, age 87, and Nancy Gross, age 81, who recently lived in the town of Rome, voted in both Wisconsin and Florida in the November 2022 election. The investigator also found they had voted early in Florida and absentee in Wisconsin in the November 2020 general election. They have since moved to a retirement home in Ohio, but will be back in Adams County on December 27th for their court appearance. And that's the news on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Cloudy tonight with lows around 30. Southeasterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 43. Lows level off around 26 tomorrow night. Highs around 39 Friday under clear skies. 46 Saturday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 40.
Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. News, talk, and sports from Vesper to Plover.
They are going to become more brutal.
Because all the hippies are trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. This is Robert Pilot in Washington, D.C., and you're listening to Native Roots Radio, and we discuss local and national Native news and events. And I want to just say that this portion of Native Roots Radio is brought to you by Little Moments Count.
Little Moments Count is a statewide collaborative focused on helping parents and caregivers learn about the importance of brain development in the first 3 years of life. For more information, you can visit littlemomentscount.org.
Ogama, I'm here in Washington, D.C., and ICWA was going on today, and we're really happy to have our guest on. And I do believe, Patrice, are you there? Awesome. Let's have Ogama. Will you introduce her?
Yes. Welcome, Attorney Patrice Kanesh. Patrice works with the Native American Rights Fund and works through her advocacy firm called Pihin Haha Consulting. She's also been nominated to be the Commissioner of the Administration for Native Americans in the Department of Health and Human Services. She's currently awaiting confirmation, and she attended the oral arguments today at the U.S. Supreme Court in Brackeen versus Halland, also known as the ICWA case, and it's challenging whether or not ICWA is constitutional. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Well, really happy to be here. It's been a long day, so I was up at 4:30, getting ready to get out there and stand in line at 5 o'clock, so I could be guaranteed a seat in the Supreme Court for these oral arguments.
Well, it was really, really cool seeing you this afternoon walk down those stairs of justice and seeing a familiar face. First of all, we have a lot of people that probably do not know what ICWA is that are listening to us. Do you mind just giving a quick overview of why we were all there and why you were there and what's at stake and what's going on?
Yeah, thanks, Robert. ICWA stands for the Indian Child Welfare Act, and it was adopted in 1978 by the entire Congress, who really emphatically wanted to address the issue, the concern, the tragedy of the wholesale removal of Native children from their tribes, from their families. And this wasn't one or two children. It was 20%, 30% of Native children were being placed outside of their homes, outside of their families, outside of the tribal community. And it became just a definite threat to the preservation of the tribe itself and cultural community integrity. And the issue before the court, and this is not certainly a new issue for the court, but this one really challenged on its face the entire constitutionality of the Indian Child Welfare Act. And when I say that Congress adopted the law in 1978, it was really part of a suite of laws, including the Indian Civil Rights Act, to really redress and reform a lot of heavy-duty bureaucracy and addressing the state's overreach in terms of looking at Native families and Native children and deciding and defining in their own ways what is a proper home life. And many of these removals were based on poverty conditions on many reservations and struggling families to make ends meet. And state social workers just very unfamiliar with tribes and tribal ways of life just found these to be wholly unacceptable. So we have decades and decades of Indian children being removed for a number of different reasons. We've heard a lot recently about boarding schools, right? Well, there is a whole concerted effort to remove Indian children from their families in different ways. So the plaintiffs, state of Texas, the attorney general from Texas, and private adoptive families were challenging the Indian Child Welfare Act, saying Congress could not make that law. And they're saying that the Congress can't make that law for a couple reasons. One is that it interferes with the state's authority over family relations, and that's called the anti-commandeering challenge. And then they're also saying that the placement preferences within the Indian Child Welfare Act and its regulations are race-based. They're also saying, well, wait a minute, even if Congress can make this law, it's done so impermissibly and violates other provisions of the Constitution. So we have a number of particular challenges to the Indian Child Welfare Act under the Constitution, and it really raises the specter of the federal government's relationship with Native nations and their citizens. So that's the case in the nutshell. I'm involved in it because of my work with the Native American Rights Fund, with KC Family Programs, and other Native child welfare organizations like the Minneapolis Indian Child Welfare Law Center. There's been a huge outpouring of support in favor of the Indian Child Welfare Act. NARF itself had 492 tribes and Native-led organizations sign on to its amicus brief. There's incredibly strong support for the Indian Child Welfare Act among states as well. But we do have the state of Texas and some other sort of think tanks, I'm not sure what to call them, that are challenging the tribe's right to define the placement preference of Native children in foster care and adoptive placement situations.
Wow. You know, yeah, that's crazy. You know, and one of the things I think they're not clear, and I wonder if you could help clear up here in a minute or so, we're a sovereign nation. How can a state's authority oversee that?
Well, I think that's sort of the heart of the matter, Robert. And It's what we call the Article 1 challenge, because it's the powers of Congress. And what plaintiffs are saying is that Congress doesn't have the authority to enact this kind of law. It only has powers to do really limited things, and things that don't interfere with the state's authority. And they're also saying that even if Congress has this power, which we call, you know, in Indian law context, we call it the plenary power authority of Congress to enact laws and fulfill its trust responsibility to Native nations, they're saying that the manner of exercising this power is impermissible, and that it's really sort of a state's rights challenge to the law in itself, because ICWA requires that the state provides active efforts to reunite the Native child with its family. And those efforts, you know, can have a whole range, but it does impose a duty on the state. And Texas is saying, and the private plaintiffs are saying, that this is an undue burden. And this undue burden is also unconstitutional.
Wow. We should take a quick break here, and we'll come back with Patrice Kanush. Thank you so much for stopping in. This is information that we need our relatives know out there. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Health insurance that fits my budget? I'm covered. I needed health coverage I could count on and afford. MNsure helped me find a plan that works for me, and they helped me save money. Did you know that most Minnesotans qualify for savings through MNsure? And they have free experts who can help you sign up for coverage. Go to MNsure.org today and get started and get covered. That's MNsure.org. MNsure.org.
Minnesotans age 65 plus might qualify for Health Partners Minnesota Senior Health Options. The plan includes personal support, coverage for medical prescription drugs and dental, plus over 30 extra benefits. Eligibility information is available at healthpartners.com/oneplan. Health Partners is a health plan that contracts with both Medicare and the Minnesota Medical Assistance Medicaid program to provide benefits of both programs to enrollees. Enrollment in Health Partners depends on contract renewal.
I am Oshawashko Gijig. I'm from Red Lake Nation, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Hey, this portion of the show is brought to you by MNsure. Just wanted to let everybody know that I needed health coverage that I could count on and afford, and MNsure helped me find a plan that worked for me, and they helped me save me money. Health insurance that fit my budget, and I was covered. It was awesome. Did you know that most Minnesotans qualify for savings through MNsure, and they have free experts who can help you sign up for coverage? You can go to MNsure.org and get started to get covered today.
And I have one more announcement, Robert. The St. Paul Indians, or excuse me, St. Paul Public Schools American Indian Education Program and the Interfaith Action Department of Indian Work is having a powwow at Humboldt High School on Friday, November 11th from 6 to 8 p.m. That's Humboldt High School at 30 Baker Street East in St. Paul. They'll have a $50 gift card incentive for Pfizer and bivalent booster shots for ages 6 months and up, free flu shots, and children under 11 must be accompanied by an adult. As a reminder, this is a drug and alcohol-free event, and security will be present to keep everybody safe, but make sure you turn out for the November powwow for the Department of Indian Work and St. Paul Public Schools.
You know, I'm going to make that after the show, Ogama, because that's my old stomping ground, St. Paul Public Schools, being an old, well, not old, but a retired teacher. I guess I am old. Hey, we have Patrice Kanush, who is here with the hearings on ICWA here in Washington, D.C., and I know she's super tired like I am. I had to fly. I had to get to the airport by 6 and fly out here for this special occasion, but Ogama, you have a question. Why don't we start out with you with your question?
Yeah, I just want to remind listeners that we're here with Patrice Kunesh, who's currently waiting to be confirmed as the commissioner of the administration for Native Americans in the Department of Health and Human Services. And she's worked with the Native American Rights Fund and also has an advocacy firm. She's an attorney. And she was in person today at the U.S. Supreme Court for the oral arguments in Brackeen versus Halland, which is also known as the case that's challenging ICWA or the Indian Child Welfare Act. Patrice, what is the energy that was happening in that courtroom today?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. I can tell you that I, along with other lawyers who are supporting ICWA, we were very tensed, nervous about what kind of questions we would hear and what sort of signals we might get from the court. Behind us, I'm a member of the Supreme Court, behind us were the parties to the case, and then we had the general public. And I think there just was a palpable tension in the court because we feel, you know, so much is at stake. But what we heard from the court was very engaged arguments, I should say questions to the attorneys. There were four attorneys, two representing Texas, one representing the Brackeens, one representing the state of Texas, and then two on behalf of the Native defendants, the Native families and such. And the court, every justice in the Supreme Court asked questions, and I got to see the newest justice, Ketanji Brown Jackson, asking really good questions, and she clearly understood the Indian Child Welfare Act. This was her first case involving Indian law on the bench, and she asked really strong questions about why is this case before the court? Is there any standing? Like, do these plaintiffs even have a right to be before the court? And then the other justices, four were very engaged and obviously had a strong command of Indian law. Justice Gorsuch, who's from Colorado, very much grew up in his legal career doing Indian law and understanding tribal sovereignty. But we have other justices who don't see or understand the role of tribes, even though they're part of the Constitution. You know, they even predate the U.S. government as part of the government-to-government relationship, really challenging in their questions sort of the scope of ICWA. Why do we have these placement preferences, and how does this work? And they did not seem to have a strong command of how the act applied, you know, in effect to Native people in tribal courts or in state courts, and how tribes, you know, really exercise their sovereignty. So I felt that the conversation, this was the longest conversation, I should say, the argument that I've ever been to. It was scheduled for 90 minutes. It went to 3 hours and 15 minutes. And so the court was clearly engaged and involved in this case and really struggling to figure out amongst the seven different issues that they granted cert on, you know, how to figure this case out. So it's going to be... It's going to be a very complex case to decide, and a decision that I'm cautiously optimistic is going to uphold the Indian Child Welfare Act on its constitutional basis, because no court has ever found it unconstitutional. It might narrow some of the placement preferences, but we're hoping it's going to take a look at it preliminarily on the procedural grounds of standing. And you know, our argument is that the plaintiffs do not have standing. They do not have the legal right, you know, to bring this case before the court. They don't have a legal issue or, you know, damages to remedy in this case. One of the things that we also... Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry I cut in. It's just, it's disappointing to hear that so many people don't understand why this is important and how it really acts in effect. I mean, we're talking about people at the highest level of legal government in the United States, and they really don't seem to have a grasp on this. And that's a little disappointing to hear, but I'm sorry I interjected. Go ahead and continue.
Oh, Indian law is rather complex. We have a whole entire federal title of federal statutes, Title 25, dedicated to the course of dealings between the federal government and tribes. But it's still a rather unique or specialized area of law, and I got into it because of my family heritage and knowing that tribal sovereignty, tribal rights, and Native children, you know, absolutely do have the right for this cultural connection and heritage. The court doesn't get many of these cases, and when they do, they bring up, you know, questions that are rather unique. Most people think of the United States as two sovereigns, the federal government and the state government. And last night, you know, during the elections, we saw that in action. Well, in fact, there's a third sovereign. We have the tribal governments, sovereign governments that have a government-to-government and political relationship with the federal government. And these cases, you know, often are problematic for courts because they don't understand the nature of tribal sovereignty, that they are a third sovereign in our federal government system, separate and unique from state governments for sure, and that the federal government has, you know, over 250 years of a course of dealings with tribal nations. So a lot of that is sort of context building and bringing up historical records, you know, from 250 years ago. And certainly the Constitution speaks to the sovereign status of tribes. And so our job is not just to look at it from a legal perspective, but to bring in that history, that relevance of this course of dealing, and bring it to the modern day of how tribes interact and express that sovereignty through tribal court systems and prioritizing, you know, child welfare as part of their tribal sovereignty.
Patrice, I just have a quick question here. Now, we talk about race-based, but we're not race-based, are we?
You're right, Robert. And that was something that was very troubling to the court. And they asked this question in a couple of different ways. And we know that the tribe has a government-to-government relationship with the federal government. And that relationship is a political basis. It's because it's a nation-to-nation relationship. And the tribe's relationship to its members is citizenship, and that's a political relationship as well. So there is a depth of authority defining this relationship as a political relationship. But because the Indian Child Welfare Act talks about placement preferences with Native families and extended
Game day. Green Bay and Minnesota. Place the frozen tundra. Kick off your new year by scoring tickets to this longtime rivalry at Lambeau Field January 1st. It's our New Year's Day Green Bay giveaway from WFHR. Register for your chance to win two tickets at one of our Dropbox sponsors. Jennings in Wisconsin Rapids, Puzzles at the Lakes in Rome, La Taqueria in Wisconsin Rapids, and Piggly Wiggly in Nacoosa. One registration per person per location ends November 28th. One name then drawn at each Dropbox sponsor wins a $50 gift card and a chance to win the tickets. The game day winner will be randomly drawn and announced on November 30th. It's the New Year's Day Green Bay Giveaway from locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
Fly your team flag.
Down he goes! Another sack!
Cue up, jump around, and rep your Cardinal and white Bucky gear.
He's gone! All the way!
It's Badger football.
Touchdown, Wisconsin!
Let's go!
Six more on the board for the Wisconsin Badgers.
Join us Saturday. It's the regular season finale against the rival Gophers. Our coverage begins at 12:30.
Right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
My husband, Alex Hussey, was hit by an IED in Afghanistan.
I was point man on foot patrol, and I stopped on the bomb. Lost my legs and left hand in the explosion.
And he suffered a severe traumatic brain injury. Yes.
As America's veterans face challenges, DAV is there.
There are so many mountains to climb, and we do it together.
With the right support, more veterans can reach victories great and small.
Seeing Alex learning how to snow ski, that's life-changing.
DAV provides a lifetime of support to veterans of every generation, helping more than a million veterans each year.
Alex did it. He skied down this mountain. That's something he won't forget.
With the right support, there are no limits.
To see him on that slope and smiling like that, we'll be taking this home.
This has meant so much. Thank you, DAV.
Alex Hussey, thank you for your service. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. The Adams County Sheriff's Office is asking for help locating a runaway 15-year-old girl they believe might be in the Stevens Point area. 15-year-old Braylon Mueller was last seen on November 10th at the Adams Friendship High School. She is 5'6" tall, with long brown hair and blue eyes. She weighs about 135 pounds and was last known to be wearing a black Nike hoodie, gray leggings, and tan or white sandals. If you have any information on Braylon Mueller's whereabouts, contact the Adams County Sheriff's Office at 608-339-3304. The Wisconsin State Patrol is reminding drivers to use caution when driving on roads as temperatures drop. Even clear roads that look safe might be slippery. A drop in temperatures increases the chance that you can lose control of your vehicle. Adjust your speed accordingly. Don't use cruise control on wet roads and eliminate distractions. Plan ahead so you have time to get to your destination if you need to reduce your speed. And that's the news on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Cloudy tonight with lows around 30. Southeasterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 43. Lows level off around 26. Tomorrow night, highs around 39. Friday, under clear skies. 46 Saturday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 40.
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. Locally grown radio is 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
In multiple sessions with the Diocesan Review Board. In sports, Badger men's basketball takes on Dayton this afternoon. The Bucks host Chicago tonight. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
those restaurants at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, this portion of Native Roots Radio is brought to you by Little Moments Count.
Little Moments Count is a statewide collaborative focused on helping parents and caregivers learn about the importance of brain development in the first 3 years of life. Nearly 80% of brain growth happens in the first 1,000 days, and small moments of interaction like talking, playing, reading, and singing really help create the pathways that build a child's brain during the early stages of life. For more information, you can visit littlemomentscount.org. Native Roots Radio is really excited to be partnered with Little Moments Count to host these conversations focused on early childhood development. We've been welcoming monthly guests to talk about how they view the role of early childhood development and bright futures and strong communities for Native people throughout Minnesota. And we're excited to have them back, and we'll have them again in the future as well. Welcome back, Barb.
That's hey, there they are. Hey, I just want to say Native Roots Radio is all over Civic Media Network all over, and I'm in Washington, D.C. supporting ICWA, so the timing of this show is awesome. And I want to just jump right into the questions, you guys. Do you mind? Can I get Lucy? Can you tell me about the professional development initiative that you and Indigenous Vision are working on?
Sure. Well, I wouldn't say me personally. I currently work for the Department of Ed in the Early Learning Services Division at the state of Minnesota. I'm a longtime early childhood professional. I've been a teacher, director. You know, I've led professional development. And in my role at MDE, I really started to think critically. What sort of opportunities are available for our American Indian teachers or teachers who serve primarily American Indian children? And I thought, you know, I was in a position and, you know, had some funding. And so I reached out to Indigenous Visioning and see if they would partner with me to learn from our early childhood professionals in the community. And that's what we did. We reached out to the community and we asked them, what's important to them? What would they like to learn more about? What knowledge do they hold? In, you know, filling the gap of the professional development needed by our teachers today.
Well, that's exciting. Hey, Barb, welcome back. Great to see you as always. I want to ask you a quick question, and then you can take it from there. Barb, what is Indigenous Visioning's role in this initiative, and how does it... how does this align with Little Moments Count's work?
Oh, Barb, it looks like you might be on mute. You're not on mute, but it looks like maybe your microphone isn't connected. So maybe if we just dial back just a little bit here. We're here with Lucy Little Wolf. Is it Arias? Is that how you say your last name, Lucy?
Arias.
Thank you. I can't roll my R, so I'm sorry about that.
I'm still figuring it out, too. I've been in Minnesota too long, be honest.
Lucy is Ojibwe, Blackfeet, and Latina, mother of three children by birth and kinship adoption. And as she said, she's the early language and literacy specialist. And prior to that was working with preschool development grants for tribal nations at the Minnesota Department of Education. And we're really excited to have her here to talk about the Indigenous professional development for early childhood educators. And in 2022, the Indigenous Visioning, who we have Barb Faber on for, conducted this survey of Indigenous early childhood professionals throughout Minnesota. So that's what we're talking about today. And it sounds like we have Barb back. Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, it's good to hear your voice. Welcome back, Barb.
Barb Faber, CEO of Indigenous Visioning. And back to Robert's question. So when Lucy reached out to us, you know, we had a great conversation about what's important in tribal early childhood settings, or just about any kind of early childhood settings where Indigenous children could be. And so, like Lucy said, we surveyed teachers throughout the state of Minnesota, the tribal early childhood teachers in all the tribal programs. And we had a great response. And many of them felt that the, you know, the culture was important, and finding out, you know, native language and literacy, indigenous outdoor learning environments, indigenous food and nutrition, social emotional support for children. So those are just some of the top ones. And so Lucy asked us to do, you know, to implement, do the survey, and find cultural trainers to help put on those trainings. So the survey responses was really interesting. And, you know, the research is out there. I mean, it tells us that, you know, the inclusion of children's indigenous cultural practices can help contextualize academic concepts within the children's positive self-esteem. We all know that, but now we have research that backs us up.
Wow, you do. And, you know, I know this, and I think you know this, but can you tell our audience why this is important work?
Lucy, do you want to try that one?
It's who we are, right? We're all born with our gifts, and we're all born with a path. And as Indigenous people, it's important that our teachers can be our knowledge holders and share that with us. So, you know, it can be a complicated answer or very simple. It's who we are, and we deserve to have the opportunity to learn more and how it looks and how it feels and what it means.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. Go ahead, Barb.
And Robert, some of the other research that we looked at, it's, you know, when you offer culture and language in a classroom with children, you know, it has it's a strong support to reverse historical trauma. It helps develop them a strong cultural identity. They learn cultural teachings, prevent culture loss for the entire community. So it can be a feeder program to get back the culture and the language in our communities and our families.
That's super important. You did a survey. What else were the results in this survey, or did we cover a lot of it?
The response was overwhelming, and you know they talked about. We asked them if they had a range of knowledge about Indigenous cultures and traditions. 24% of them felt they had a low cultural knowledge, and 53% felt they were intermediate, and only 22 felt that they were very knowledgeable in the culture and tradition. So, you know, we want to level the playing field, and we want to get more, you know, we're looking for more, always looking for more cultural teachers and elders to share. And in the classroom. And so, you know, the survey was done, was for Indigenous teachers, and, you know, the training is going to be created for, by them and by elders and cultural teachers. So we're always looking for some, you know, those. And so if anybody is interested, make sure you get a hold of us at our website is www.indigenousvisioning.com. And majority of the respondents wanted additional training around well-being. They wanted early childhood models from an Indigenous lens. They wanted to learn about Indigenous concepts, principles, and practices. So, there's such a need out there. And, you know, I was so excited when Lucy contacted us about this, because this is something we've been talking about for a long time at Indigenous Visioning. So Lucy made it happen.
Wow, that's awesome. Good for you. And, you know, we we as tribal nations across the nation should be helping. What can the tribes promote culture within the classroom? How can our tribes do it, and how are you working with that? I don't know if Lucy wants to answer that, or if you do, Barb.
I can start, and then Lucy, if you want to add to it. So the professionals that responded, they talked, 80% of them wanted the training in person. You know, we not only asked them what they wanted to learn, but, you know, how they wanted to receive that training. You know, especially in a world of virtual training is so, everything's virtual these days because of the pandemic. But 80% of them said in person, 51% at a conference, 44% online, said an online group, and 31 says on an individual basis. So nearly 40% of all those surveys also said that they do not receive culturally relevant training right now. So we hope to change those statistics.
Yeah, we got about a minute left in the segment. Lucy, you have anything to add? And I'll just add that I know when relatives that haven't been around and are just coming around for the first time and they hear the drum, how significant that is and how they feel it. And that's what kind of what you guys are talking about.
Exactly. You know, one thing I would tell programs and, you know, our tribes is to really think outside of the classroom. You know, we didn't learn in the confines of a box. And so really thinking of what are our strengths or what are our assets in our community? And that's our natural world, our elders, right? And really asserting, you know, the role of parents as being the first and most important teacher in a child's life.
Wow, that's a great way to end the segment. Hey, we are here doing our weekly, monthly check-in with littlemoments.count. We're here with Barb and Lucy, and we're going to come back and wrap up the show with a couple more questions. And one thing Lori has asked on Facebook is, and we'll get to this when we come back, is this or will this be published? So that's a really great question. And you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Hi, this is Robert Pilot here telling you about Minnesota Native American art. Did you know that Twin Cities is known for Native art? Well, if you're not familiar, then check out All My Relations Arts. It's a program that seeks to increase the visibility and value of these incredibly talented American Indian artists in all forms of art while honoring the history and the presence of indigenous cultures. And right now, All My Relations Arts is showcasing Rosie Seamus Dance, She Who Lives on the Road to War. This is an immersive installation dance performance created by Rosie Seamus in response to global loss and the collective need to come together in peace and reconciliation. She Who Lives on the Road to War is a place for visitors to rest, grieve, console, and meditate. Performances will take place through mid-December. Find the performance schedule at allmyrelationsarts.com. I love all the indigenous art here in the Twin Cities, and I hope you can enjoy it too. allmyrelationsarts.com.
Health insurance that fits my budget? I'm covered. I needed health coverage I could count on and afford. MinSure helped me find a plan that works for me, and they helped me save money. Did you know that most Minnesotans qualify for savings through MinSure? And they have free experts who can help you sign up for coverage. Go to MinSure.org today and get started and get covered. That's MNSure.org. MNSure.org.
is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1, U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, this... Go ahead, Robert.
No, you got it. You got it.
Are we doing... You do it, Robert. You lead me on that one.
Oh, well, I can... Let's do a couple of them then. This portion of Native Roots Radio is brought to you by A Little Moments Count, and I think the other one is our standard fourth segment one, Ogama.
Yes, so this portion of the show is also brought to you by Howling for Wolves, a...
Protecting Howling, wolves.
Protecting wolves for future generations.
Well, get this is a live show, Ogama. Oh!
I know. Oh! I know. It's not Monday, is it? The ICWA case has me a little stressed, everybody, so thanks for your patience, but we're really happy to be back with Little Moments Count.
Right on, right on. Hey, so let's jump in. We only got a few more minutes here. Barb, I want to ask just a quick thing that Lori asked one that's listening to this is, will this be published or is it published out there anywhere?
It's not published at this time, and I am not sure. That's a Lucy question. It'll be her document when we're complete. Lucy?
Yeah, it'll be. I know Barb and them are wrapping up, and they have, you know, they want to do some feedback again, gather some more feedback from teachers. But yeah, it'll be published. It'll probably be published on Indigenous Visioning's website, MDE's website. So yeah, it'll be out there. But I'm sure, you know, I think it's in a good shape. If anybody's interested, I think Barb could share it. I could share it. So.
Definitely. And Barb, maybe give your email, or not email, but your website address again.
Yes, it's Indigenous Visioning, one word, .com. Very easy. You know, and earlier you asked me how this relates to and aligns with Little Moments Counts, and it aligns perfectly. And, you know, Little Moments Count is all about the more you talk and play and read and sing to your child every day, you know, the smarter their brain becomes, you know, their little sponges. Well, it's the same thing with the culture and the language. And so we're so grateful for Little Moments Count for supporting this and the state of Minnesota Department of Education, because this is important work, and this is just the start. Part of it, I believe, and we know there's a need for it, a demand for it, and so, you know, please, again, if you're a cultural trainer, or you have something that you feel that, you know, early childhood educators, you know, could learn from, you know, please contact us. We're anxious to talk to you.
You know, Barb and Lucy, this really fits into what I'm doing here out in Washington, D.C., and why it's so important that our little ones stay in the family to get this. And I know, me personally, we have a couple generations that are lost in our way, you know, and we're coming back, but we don't want more generations being lost, Barb.
No, we don't. No, we don't. And my heart and prayers go out to you all in D.C., and Miigwech for the fight, and just know that we are here and praying for everybody.
Right, and it just really fits into your work, so it's just makes so much sense that we need to, you know, really teach our little ones our ways, because they are our ways. And again, you know, I talked about a little earlier how I see family members, how the drum affects them, how language affects them inside, you know. Lucy, I mean, have you seen that too in your work?
Oh, definitely. And even with myself, you know, I was blessed to work alongside a first language speaker years ago. And, you know, the very direct teaching she gave me and the indirect teachings I still carry to this day. So, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Barb, you know, we've covered a lot of stuff. I'm wondering if there's anything that you want to bring up here in this last few minutes.
Well, I would just say that, you know, culture in the classroom is it just makes sense because, you know, most of our Indigenous children are being taught by through a westernized curriculum. And sometimes it's adapted to tribal classrooms, but for the most part, it's a westernized curriculum. So we've been working and talking about creating that curriculum because, you know, we know it can be indigenized. Just about anything can be indigenized, a curriculum. But why, when we should be, you know, providing those direct lessons and teachings like Lucy was talking about? That's how our children learn. That's how we learn. And you're right, Robert. We got two generations to make up here to bring our culture and our language back and reverse adverse childhood experiences and replace them with positive childhood experiences.
Well, yeah, and it's a great point. And I'm glad we're talking this way because it's so important. You know, I've seen so many of our Native kids as in the years of teaching that have been lost until you know somebody has reached out, you know, and told them it's not a race, and that told them that it's okay to be where you're at, and because we understand our people, and especially you guys understand the young ones, and especially the ones that went away, and the parents are learning too, and at the same time. So Barb, it's just a wonderful thing.
Thank you, Chief McWitch. You know, and that's why we created Indigivox. And I know we've talked on this show about that, but it's the same concept. We're trying to get more culture and language and things that are familiar with our kids, things from home that they're familiar with. And absolutely, you know, the case that you're listening to out in Washington, D.C., it's critical. And just imagine, you know, all the children that aren't in their tribal communities, you know, they're not getting any of this. And so we need to keep them in our communities.
Exactly. And we know that when people come back to us in an older age, that it has really affected them and they don't know why they feel left out until they come back.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the education achievement gap, and, you know, we have all those statistics, bad statistics that show us, well, you know, why we are, you know, the achievement gap. We have low graduation rates and high dropout rates and health issues. You know, that is all from that historical trauma. And the more we can share with our kids this rich culture and language, you know, the better they're going to be as adults.
Exactly. Hey, we've got about a minute left. Lucy, do you have anything to comment on? I know how your curriculum is morphing into more, or how you came about it. It's just really exciting to hear educators really jumping into this and knowing our kids and how kids learn. And so it's just exciting, Lucy.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, little kids know so much. When they're little bitty babies, just because they can't tell us what they know, we assume they don't know a lot, but that's not true. And they know way more than they are to communicate. And that progresses with them, right? When it's time to learn to read, little kids know way more than the simple books that are put in their hands. So it's our job as the adults and the educators to fill them up with all the good knowledge in the world, right? Let it be our cultural ways, our language, or even the science of nature, right? To fill them up with those things, because one day when they pick up a book and that knowledge is there, they're already gonna know it, and they're just gonna build upon it.
Great way to end it. Thanks, Barb. Thanks, Lucy. Thanks, Ogemon. I want to thank Mary Kunish's sister, Patrice Kunish, coming in. And, of course, we want to say, Petey Gigi, thank you to Little Moments Count for what they do for our community. We'll be back tomorrow. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake.
Hi, this is Laura.
I'm
I'm a wife and the mother of two kids, and I've got a good job.
Bye, Mom.
See you, Mom.
A pretty important job. Because of my family and my job, I really care about this neighborhood. It's a good neighborhood. Yes, there's some crime. And when I drive to work, like now, I realize that some people here don't trust the police. So the police should be reaching out to this community, and this community should reach out to the police. That's the way to make this a safer place. And when I get to work in the precinct house and put on my uniform, I can tell you, as a police officer, that this department is reaching out to the community, and the community is doing its part. We're building partnerships. This should be happening everywhere. This is how we can all be safer. Get involved. Start the conversation.
Start the conversation and help stop crime. To learn the five things you can do, go to ncpc.org/preventviolentcrime. A message from the National Crime Prevention Council and the Bureau of Justice.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From Lake Wazeecha and